Simple as that. That's the lesson. Don't forget, Christian, it's chasing after the wind. What is chasing after the wind? And we'll talk about that this morning. That phrase is found 9 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. When I asked Jenny on the way over here this morning, she didn't want me to tell you this. I said, can you give me an image, you know, create an image for me of someone chasing after the wind? So she thought about that for a second. And she said, you asking this question? And I said, well, I succeeded in the purpose for which I asked it. Now I've got an introduction to our lesson this morning. But this is the message all through the book of Ecclesiastes, which I highly recommend you reading quite often, because it's the perspective that is created in the book of Ecclesiastes that is so important for us to remember. And hence the title, Don't Forget. Don't forget, Christian. It's chasing after the wind. Ecclesiastes 1 in verses 1 through 4 says, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, and almost everybody understands this to be Solomon. And Solomon, perhaps even writing, it seems clear, writing at the end of his life or toward the end of his life. These are the words of somebody who has observed many things and done many things in his life. Solomon certainly fits that category of people. And it's somebody who has perhaps done a lot of wrong things in their life as well, which Solomon did. Many things that were in disobedience to God. And even toward the end of his life, it talks about how he went after other gods because of the women that he had married, the idolatry that he contributed to and participated in. And there's nothing in the scriptures that we can point to that indicates that Solomon ever repented of those sins, unless you understand the book of Ecclesiastes to be that repentance. Nothing certain about that. But it's possible that this book is written from that perspective of somebody who's seen all the wrong that he's done and understood life from God's perspective rather than the perspective that he seemed to want to live it by. So whether that's true or not, whether he repented or not, we'll never know, perhaps, at least in this life. But the message is extremely valuable. In verse 2, he says, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. And as you might have noticed on the overhead before we started services, the scripture was up there and it said, for the word vanity, it says vapor. That's literally what the word means. Vapor of vapors. All is a vapor. That rings a bell to me in James chapter 4 when James talks about life being just a vapor. And so the idea of a vapor would be that which is temporary. And I think that's the way we need to understand this phrase, vanity of vanities. Everything is temporary. And even in verse 4, he highlights that concept. A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. He's contrasting our lives with the earth there. We come and go. We are but a vapor. We are temporary. Vapor of vapors. Everything is a vapor. And that's the perspective of the writer, of the preacher. In verses 13 and 14, he says, I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. It's not very happy to view life from the perspective that it's just a vapor. It's just temporary. Nothing lasts. I want it to last. I want it to find meaning, purpose, value. And he says, it is a unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with, to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. In verse 14, he says, I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is a vapor. All is vanity and a striving after the wind. The New International Version calls it a chasing after the wind. I like that image. All I could think of from an image standpoint is some insane person, you know, running around trying to capture the wind. Chasing the wind. I can't get a hold of it. I can't grasp it. I can't hold on to it. I have it for a second. It's gone. It's temporary. And that's the concept that we see in the book of Ecclesiastes. So chasing the wind is a metaphor for pursuing futility. The wise king learned that pursuing things that do not have eternal significance is only chasing after the wind. And that really is the message of the entire book of Ecclesiastes. Chapter 1 and verse 8, all things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. We're never satisfied here. Why? Because everything is temporary. It's here and it feels good for a moment and then it's gone. It seems good and then it's gone. It's temporary. And day after day after day comes and goes. And we hold on to nothing. Ultimately, as he's going to point out, we hold on to nothing at all in death. We just go back to the earth. Back to the dust of the earth. There's nothing here in this world that is not temporary. Nothing satisfies. In verse 15, here's one I think about all the time. I get burdened down by the injustice, the crookedness in the world. What is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be counted. I can't fix things. Nobody can fix things. They're broken. It's a broken world. Can't fix it. And there's need. There's constant need. And it's never satisfied. So he's viewing life from this perspective. That this, really, when you look at it, it's a burdensome thing. And then he talks about in chapter 2 about all the things which he accomplished and all the pleasures which he accumulated to himself. And all the wisdom that he gained. And all the wealth. And he said, nothing satisfies. In verse 11 of chapter 2, I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all was a vapor and a striving after wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. What a negative person. That's the way it sounds, doesn't it? And if that were all that he said in this book, it would be negative. But that's not all he says, is it? Why doesn't anything satisfy? Because it's temporary. Look at verses 13 through 17. I think this really highlights the main point that he's trying to make all throughout the book. Verses 13 through 17 of Ecclesiastes 2. Then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness. That's pretty positive there. Yeah, I'm going to try to be a wise person, not a fool. There's more gain in being wise. Then he says in verse 14, the wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. So it's good to be wise. And yet, I perceived that the same event happens to all of them. And I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will happen to me also. Why then have I been very wise? And I said in my heart, this also is vanity. Even my wisdom that I've gained is temporary. It's vain. It's a vapor. He says in verse 16, For of the wise, as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance, seeing that in the days to come all will have long been forgotten, how the wise dies just like the fool. And so I hated life, because what is done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is a vapor and a striving after wind. That is the perspective from this world. Don't forget, Christian, it's all chasing after the wind. That is a true perspective of life under the sun from a strictly this world perspective. And that's where you understand his use of the phrase under the sun, under the sun, under the sun. He's getting to the concept, the perception, the perspective of somebody who lives in this life just looking at things from a worldly perspective. But we are not of the world, are we, Christians? We are in the world, but we are not of the world. And so there is more to his perspective. I want you to look down with me at verses 20 through 26. Verses 20 through 26. So I turned about and I gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun, because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. I built all this stuff. I accumulated all this stuff. I had all of this pleasure. And now I'll have to leave. And I'm leaving it all to someone who didn't toil for it. What a vanity. What a vapor. It's temporary. In verse 22, what has a man from all the toil and striving of heart with which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow, and his work is a vexation. Even in the night his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. I think that's the way a lot of people live, whether they want to admit it or not. It's a vexation of heart. I've got to continue to provide. I've got to continue to survive. I've got to continue to work. And for what? It's fleeting. It's empty. It's going. It's leaving. I don't get to hold on to anything. And I just have to keep accumulating again and again and again. My toil is a vexation. And at night, my heart does not rest. That's life under the sun. From a this world perspective. Do you agree with that? Live long enough and you will see that this is so. And that's the preacher looking back with great wisdom at life under the sun. But now notice in verse 26, or verse 24, There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? For to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner, he has given the business of gathering and collecting, only to give to one who pleases God. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. Now we have God in the picture. It's not just life under the sun now. It's not just a perspective of this world and this world alone. Now we have a consciousness of God in the message of the preacher. And he says that God has given you food. and drink and enjoyment. And it's your reward for your labor under the sun. And so you can be grateful to God for all of these gifts that you've given or that you've been given. And then you can look out at the world and you can see that the world is striving and toiling and fighting and accumulating and surviving. But you are simply receiving. You're receiving the blessings of God. You're not looking at your toil that way. You're not looking at your labor that way as vanity. You're not looking at life as empty and meaningless. God is in your mind. God is the one who is giving you every good gift. God is blessing you in this life. And now he's going to continue with this thought and bring it to an eternal perspective in chapter 3. So look with me in chapter 3. The famous passage in verses 1 and following about there is a time for everything under heaven. There's a time for all these things. All these things happen in life and each one has their time in this world under the sun. But notice verse 9 of Ecclesiastes chapter 3. What gain has the worker from his toil? I have seen the business that God has given to the children of men to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. I perceived that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also, that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. So now he's bringing the concept of eternity into the picture. And he's saying God has put eternity into the hearts of man. Man recognizes deep down inside that there needs to be something more. And when man accepts that God is the answer to that problem, to that question, and man starts to look beyond this life, and man starts to realize that there is eternity that God is going to give him, then he takes a completely different perspective on this life. And so instead of looking at life as burdensome and toilsome and a vanity and empty and meaningless and purposeless, man has now the ability to be at peace, to have joy, to eat and to drink and to receive all the good gifts from God and to keep them in the perspective that of eternity. That this is not my home. This is not where I'm going to live forever. This is not the world of purpose and meaning, that I'm going somewhere into eternity with God. And that's what gives me meaning. That's what gives me purpose. That's what allows me to toil. That's what gives this life meaning. Only God. The only thing that can give this life meaning is God. Because God is eternity. And everything else is a vapor. It's all meaningless. It's empty. It's worthless. It's futile. It's empty because it's temporary. So there's a time for everything. There's a purpose for everything under heaven. It's not like this world is purposeless, but it's only purposeful in the context of eternity because everything vanishes. Everything is a vapor. Everything from a time standpoint is meaningless. So don't forget, Christian, it's all chasing after the wind without the eternal perspective. And so look at chapter 8 and verse 15. Chapter 8. And verse 15. And I commend joy. I commend joy. For man has no good thing under the sun, but to eat and drink and be joyful, for this will go with him in his toil through the days of his life that God has given him under the sun. Look at Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 7. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 7. Go, Eat your bread in joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. Let your garments be always white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that he has given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. So that's describing life with an eternal perspective. Go, eat your bread with joy. Enjoy the wife. Enjoy life. Enjoy all the blessings that God has given you. Sometimes people think that Christianity is a religion that prevents you from enjoying yourself. Quite the contrary. I mean, totally, totally wrong. Because the only way to truly enjoy yourself, to have joy and peace and comfort, is with God. Because deep down inside, you see everything is temporary, everything is vapor, everything is fleeting. It's meaningless, it's purposeless. And so the joy that you might experience in the world is temporary. It passes, and then there's vexation and futility and pain and sorrow and suffering. Because that's what life is. It's a life that has been subjected to futility, God says, in hope that someday there will be a revealing of the children of God, Romans chapter 8. And so we await that. We persevere that way. We get through life that way only because we have an eternal. And so now we can eat our bread, drink our wine, enjoy the wife of our youth, and we're not vexed. I allow myself to get vexed sometimes, don't you? So don't forget, Christian, it's all a chasing after the wind. Don't let your soul be vexed in this life. Eat and drink and enjoy life and enjoy the wife of your youth, because you have an eternal perspective. And so it transcends the vexation of this life. And so chapter 3, verses 18 through 20, and chapter 4, verses 2 and 3. I said in my heart, with regard to the children of men, that God is testing them, that they may see that they themselves are but beasts. For what happens to the children of man and what happens to the beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and man has no advantage over the beasts, for all is vanity. Wow. That's true. When you look at life under the sun, when there's no eternal perspective, I'm just like the beasts. They die, I die. But with an eternal perspective, I'm not like the beasts, am I? As he's going to conclude in chapter 12, when we die, the dust goes back to the earth, but the spirit goes back to God who gave it. There is eternity that awaits the children of man, the godly person. Chapter 4, verses 2 and 3. And here's another extremely negative thought. From the perspective of life under the sun, without an eternal perspective, he says, I thought the dead who are already dead more fortunate than the living who are still alive. But better than both is he who has not yet been and has not seen the evil deeds that are done under the sun. Be better, he says, not to have been born. He says, better is the miscarriage later in this chapter. Better to be that one who never had to enter into this world. These are the thoughts of suicide. These are the thoughts that people have when they are tempted to commit suicide. Better not to have been born. Better not to be in this world. That's the futility of this world, the vexation of this world without an eternal perspective. But when you have an eternal perspective, when you recognize that there is meaning, there is purpose, there is value, that God is going to bless you with an eternity with Him, and that this world is not your home, and that this world is not where you find your ultimate joy, then you relax. And you say, God, I trust you, and I'm going to eat my food and drink my wine, enjoy the wife of my youth, and I'm going to be grateful for all the blessings that you give me, and I'm going to relax and know that I have purpose, I have meaning, and I'm going to serve you, and I'm going to live for you, and I'm going to be grateful to you, and I'm going to look forward, and I'm going to be optimistic, and I'm going to be joyful. All of those things come with an eternal perspective. And everything else, chasing after the wind. And so finally, chapter 11, and there's so much more we could have touched on in this book, but coming to the end of the book, chapter 11, and now to the young people. Listen, young people, you don't realize it yet, perhaps, because you haven't lived long enough to see what the preacher is seeing. But understand God's wisdom. You can understand this wisdom. You can understand the Word of God. Ecclesiastes 11, 9 and 10. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. You remember back to your youth. There were so many good times. And you just thought, that's the way life is. It's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. But you were wrong. Because life is filled with vexation and toil and sorrow. And so rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these things God will bring you into judgment. So remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body, for youth and the dawn of life are vanity. He's saying, enjoy yourselves, rejoice, young people, but live for God. Live for God. Put God first. Put eternity first. Recognize that God's going to bring you into judgment for all these things that you might be tempted to engage in for pleasure and fun in your youth. And not just judgment perhaps in the end, but judgments in the here and now even, where consequences of sin will fill your life. So, remember, young person, to live with an eternal perspective, because it's all vanity. It's all a vapor, and all that really matters is living with God. Chapter 12 and verse 1. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. That's coming if you live long enough. I keep waiting for it to come. It's coming. You know, and, you know, 20 years from now, what is this body going to be? Perhaps diseased, perhaps crippled, perhaps strokes, perhaps whatever. Isn't that fun to think about? But I have an eternal perspective. God has blessed us with the ability to have an eternal perspective beyond this life. So remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before those evil days come in which you say, I have no pleasure in them. Verses 6 through 8. Before the silver cord is snapped, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher is shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern. He's talking about death in a metaphorical sense. And the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. All is vanity. That's chasing after the wind in this life without an eternal perspective. Because it's all a vapor, and someday the dust will go back to the earth, and the spirit will go back to God who gave it. So be ready for that day. Prepare for that day. Live for that day. Keep that perspective and let it govern you. Don't forget, Christian, everything else is a chasing after the wind. And so he concludes the book in that famous passage in verses 13 and 14 of chapter 12. The end of the matter. All has been heard. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Literally, the whole of man. The word duty is added by the translators. The whole of man. It's man's all. It's everything. It's all that matters. Fear God and keep His commandments. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. Be prepared for the judgment. Put God first. Keep that perspective. And enjoy life with that perspective. And so I'll close with Matthew chapter 6, which is really what precipitated this lesson. The idea of having a single eye. Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 24, that really fits well with our lesson this morning. Jesus said in Matthew 6, verse 19, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is single, your whole body will be full of light. And if your eye is bad or evil, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and possessions." Mammon, money, literally possessions. And that's what the writer of Ecclesiastes, that's what Solomon saw. I had everything that this world could possibly offer me. And I served it. And it was a vapor. And it was a chasing after the wind of futility. So that's the perspective. That's the Christian's perspective. You've been blessed. I've been blessed to be given this perspective. Because otherwise, life would be absolutely full of sorrow and vexation and turmoil and anxiety and covetousness and all of those negative things that the writer of Ecclesiastes talks about. What a vanity. What a chasing after the wind. So I appreciate your good attention this morning. The practical side of this is up to you. The perspective will teach you. The perspective will help you to see your actions. Are you acting? Are you living? Are you thinking in the light of that perspective? Because if you're not, it's vanity. It's a chasing after the wind. You'll never be satisfied. And all of your temporary pleasures are meaningless. But they will be brought into judgment in the end. Wake up. Wake up if you need that kind of message. Wake up and do what God would have you to do and submit yourself to God's will. And trust and hope in God, because that is all that makes life purposeful and meaningful. If you're not a Christian yet, then put on Christ in baptism for the remission of your sins. Become a Christian, one who is forgiven so that one can have hope of being with God forever in eternity. Or if you'd like the prayers of the congregation, whatever your need may be, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.
Would you be free from your